This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Sports Radio 610 presents Seth Payne and Sean Pendergast.
Hey, what's happening, everybody? Happy Thursday to all of you. Nice to be with you. Appreciate you getting up with us. We are with you till 10 a.m. My name is Sean Pendergast. He's Seth Payne. Seth, top of the morning to you.
Top of the morning to you.
How
Sorry,
are you?
I was a little agitated. I was still talking to you as I realized we were about to come on air. Because I'm reading this report about how Tim Hasselbeck thinks that Mariota could be a good choice as the next Patriots quarterback. So I googled Hasselbeck real quick, and the first thing that popped up was Hasselbeck a year ago talking about how he didn't think that Marcus Mariota could be fixed. Which, hey, things change. Yeah. Times change. Mariota did look good in relief last year. I think he might be an option up there, as is potentially Deshaun Watson.
No, we'll see what happens with all that. It's funny, you know, with the Watson stuff and the Watts stuff. The Watson, there were reports on both guys yesterday. Did you happen to see who was the source of reports for Deshaun Watson yesterday?
Was it Mark Ryan?
Our old coworker Ryan's out there dropping dimes about Deshaun Watson and where he might wind up.
I go on his show every now and then because he's in Carolina. They call it. It's not Charlotte.
It's upstate.
Upstate. I don't know what that means.
He's on ESPN Upstate Radio.
Yeah, so they cover Clemson a lot, right?
Yeah, he's in South Carolina, actually.
Okay, so it's upstate South Carolina.
Right.
It's like northern Southern Carolina.
Right.
They should just merge those two.
Yeah,
I think they should merge the Virginias. I'm going to run for president on a platform of merging the Virginias and merging the Carolinas.
Okay.
And an independent Texas. Hoorah.
Yeah, no, clearly, take a look around. That's clearly what we need in this country. I look around, I say the biggest problem is the Carolinas are not united now.
We need 47 states is what we need. We need a merged Virginia, a merged Carolina,
the Dakotas,
and Texas.
Get the Dakotas.
Oh, yeah, the Dakotas. So what's that take us down to, 46 states?
Yeah. Consolidation. That's what we're doing here.
kind of like the cable companies and whatnot. Just merge everything together.
This is Seth's way of getting rid of big government, fewer states.
I'm going to get rid of big government with bigger government.
That's right. Who knew? The solution was right in front of us. It's math.
It's just the weirdest thing that I don't understand, and I gotta actually sit down and read sometime, was Ma Bell was broken up back in the day, and now they're all like reassembling. They're all getting the gang back together. Feels a little bit like 1930-ish in some respects. The old gangs it's all cool. Don't worry. I don't like this.
Telecom crew getting back together again. So Mark Ryan had a report on Monday that he has sources saying that Deshaun Watson has a list of three teams to which he would approve a trade. And I will say this, these would be three teams that I think the Texans should be talking to. The New York Jets, the Miami Dolphins, and the Carolina Panthers. You and I have gone through exhaustive hypothetical trades with all three of these teams right here. Mm-hmm. I would be down with trade. If it turned into a bidding war between these three teams, then Nick Caserio, the spotlight is on you, my friend, because these teams all have potential packages that can help you get your squad back on its feet. Now, I'd rather they keep Deshaun Watson. I think that's the better solution long term. But if you feel like you're painted into a corner, Jets, Dolphins, Panthers, all teams with picks in the top eight. Jets and Dolphins, both teams with multiple first-round picks. And I like Carolina, as you and I have gone through, Seth. They have a lot of intriguing young players on defense.
Yeah, but it's harder to find a quarterback that you'd get excited about if you do a trade with Carolina.
It is, yes.
With the Jets and the Dolphins, you feel like, hey, you know what? 50-50 chance that one of these kids is going to suck anyway, whichever one they take. But I can get excited about Justin Fields or Zach Wilson for a year or two until we see what comes down the pike.
Yeah.
And who knows? Maybe I retain the right to change my mind about all of this present situation if it actually works out. Sometimes cults are good, Sean. Cults can be very, very productive in the cult that they're creating over there on Kirby. If it ends up being a cult like, say, the Clemson or whatever, then go for it. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm all for a 12-4 cult.
Yeah, oh yeah. I'll get t-shirts that say cult Texans. Yeah. And, I'll be all about it.
Big time. So that was Deshaun Watson. The other thing was J.J. Watt yesterday. It, oddly enough, out of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, came the report on their afternoon show up there. Andrew Filippone, who we've had on this show before, he has John Clayton, I guess, on his afternoon show, or at least he did yesterday. John Clayton, former national reporter for ESPN, still is out there kind of doing his thing, and he had this to say about J.J. Watt narrowing down the field for his services.
You think J.J. Watt comes here?
No, I don't. I think it's going to be Tennessee, Buffalo, or Green Bay. Probably more Tennessee or Green Bay. Outside chance of the Raiders. So I'm anxious to see what Watt's going to be able to get.
You said Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo, John? Those are the three you're hearing? Tennessee, Green Bay, Buffalo?
Yeah, then Raiders, too.
Okay.
Okay, so that was John Clayton. Now, that was treated like a report. That was treated like John Clayton's been talking to J.J. Watt, and these are the three finalists. You listen to it there, and it's a little more conversational. I bring this up because John Clayton tweeted last night, Seth, people are misinterpreting what I said on the radio today. I said Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo were the leading teams for J.J. Watt, but not the final three. Watt hasn't narrowed his list. The Browns are still in it. So are the Raiders. He has a dozen teams after him right now. So
Filippone does a good job. I've been on Filippone's show, too. I guess apparently this morning we're talking about nothing but other people. Filippone, because when I went on Filippone's show, the headline referred to me as a J.J. Watt expert. So, and there were some opinions I had in there that if parsed out properly, it could look kind of like a report. I kind of actually, after I was on Filippone's show, and he's really funny. He does most of it tongue-in-cheek, and I think maybe people in Pittsburgh get it. But people outside of Pittsburgh don't get it. And they're like, oh, wow, this is exactly what's actually happening.
Yeah.
So I was a little bit nervous after they wrote the story about my appearance. It made it look like I was dealing out inside information or anything, or like I was the source close to J.J. Watt. It was a little bit harrowing.
It's nice to talk to a fellow defensive lineman.
Exactly. J.J. Watt expert and fellow defensive lineman.
That's who I'd be most curious to hear. The opinion I'd be most curious to hear about you being a J.J. Watt expert, J.J. Watt.
I know. That's what I was kind of thinking, was like, oh, man. Like, what if J.J. comes across this article and he's like, oh, I see Seth is calling himself a J.J. Watt expert now. Because Filippone did it a few times during the interview. He was like, we're on with J.J. Watt expert Seth Payne. I was like, hey, Andrew, what the hell is a J.J. Watt expert? Stop calling me this.
Well, so the report that we – report, air quotes. And the reason I'm leading the show off with this right here is just I feel like a lot of Texan fans may have seen that yesterday. And they're like, oh, man, J.J. Watt's down to three and one of them's the Titans. Oh, crap.
Yeah.
I wanted to play that audio just to kind of do a reality check on it more than anything else. That seems to me more like it's an educated opinion of – John Clayton, more so than it is a report. And the Vegas thing at the end is just a weird thing. Like, unless J.J. Watt has a gambling problem we don't know about, or unless he wants easy access to Celine Dion shows on a regular basis, I don't see the Raiders as an option for J.J. Watt.
So the Deshaun Watson report by Mark Ryan, how much are we reading into that or buying that? I'm guessing that Mark works his butt off, and I'm guessing he knows some people at Clemson.
That's my guess.
That somebody at least told him that these are the guys that I spoke to Deshaun about, or these are the teams. So New York, the New York Jets, the Miami Dolphins, and the Carolina Panthers.
Yeah, I think those are all safe bets for places Deshaun would go, and B, the Texans ultimately, when they're painted into a corner to actually have to start taking these phone calls, they would get into trade talks with any of those three teams, I think. All right. We are off and running on a Thursday. Speaking of J.J. Watt, we've got our first quarterfinal matchup. So we're down to the Elite Eight for J.J. Watt's services. The J.J. Watt free agency fan bracket. The quarterfinals, Bros versus Birds, next. All right, so the upshot of what we just talked about in the previous segment with J.J. Watt, with John Clayton saying on Pittsburgh radio that he believes Tennessee, Green Bay, and Buffalo are the leaders. And we can get into that a little later in the show, what the chances are for each of those teams. He was on a Pittsburgh station, Seth. So John Clayton was essentially raining on the parade of Pittsburgh hosts, hoping that J.J. Watt shows up for the Watt family reunion there. And I bring that up because that is our first quarterfinal matchup on our bracket on SportsRadio610.com. It is a battle in the AFC North of the one-seeded Pittsburgh Steelers versus the fourth-seeded Baltimore Ravens.
Yeah, you know, the funny thing about that is, Sean, that I saw all these kind of gushing reports yesterday about how, hey, Roethlisberger is willing to redo his deal, and he's talked to the Rooneys, and the Rooneys want him back. So, glory hallelujah, Roethlisberger is back. I think there's a real sense amongst a whole bunch of talk radio hosts, Steelers fans, whomever, that feel like, man, Roethlisberger's time has passed. We got to get a move on and start finding another quarterback that's not Ben Roethlisberger. Did you watch the last six games of the season? And I would imagine JJ feels the same way. I'd love to play with my brothers on a good football team, but I don't know if the Steelers are going to be good next year.
Tell me this. Are these kind of replacement-level veteran guys that are being floated around out there, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota, Andy Dalton, guys like that, are they better than Ben Roethlisberger right now? Are they a better solution in 2021 than Ben Roethlisberger is right now?
The big question there is, okay, what's Ben Roethlisberger's arm like? I think this year it looked probably like you might expect. The guy came back a year after Jake Delhomme surgery, not Tommy John surgery, but Jake Delhomme surgery, and started off all right, limited in what his arm strength was and how far he could throw downfield. And by the end of the season, it caught up to him. So I think over the course of 16 games, yeah, you might say Marcus Mariota is better than Roethlisberger. At least with a good offensive coordinator, he could utilize his legs. Mason Rudolph, in some respects, might have been a better option than Ben Roethlisberger by the end of the season. So, I think anybody that can make all the NFL throws is going to be a better quarterback than Ben Roethlisberger. But what's Roethlisberger going to look like after another year, you know, a year removed from surgery? That's the big question.
Yeah, So I think you may be answering my other question for me with your take on Roethlisberger right there. My question originally was going to be, who do you trust in the playoffs more, Ben Roethlisberger or Lamar Jackson? It sounds like just sheerly based on the fact that Roethlisberger might be washed, that you trust Lamar Jackson more, but Lamar Jackson's not been good in the playoffs.
Yeah, but you got to get to the playoffs first. So I think that there's a real chance that the Steelers aren't a playoff team next year. If Roethlisberger continues on the same track, and it's not like Roethlisberger is taking care of his body on the TB12 method all these years. Think of the quarterbacks who have done well into their late 30s as of late. Drew Brees, Tom Brady. Who am I missing? Drew Brees, Tom Brady.
Aaron Rodgers is 37 or 38.
Oh, that's right. Aaron Rodgers is getting up there. Like, all these guys are pretty damn fit, you know? Roethlisberger's not that guy. And Roethlisberger with that elbow surgery, if I were J.J. Watt, I'd be looking at it and calculating the odds and figuring out whether, okay, there's a really good chance that, let's say it's 50-50. Then if Roethlisberger doesn't come back from this surgery, then the Steelers are not going to the playoffs. They're going to look miserable the whole year. They'll have a good defense, so they'll be competitive. They'll be in games, but they're not going to be contenders. Whereas with any of these other teams, the chances of the quarterback being a Super Bowl caliber quarterback and staying healthy through the year are just way, way higher.
That division's no joke either. You know, the Ravens are the Ravens. The Browns seem to have some staying power now, Seth. This is not the Browns don't appear to be kind of a phony 11-5 team. They appear to be the real deal. Baker Mayfield, I think, is only going to get better in his second year in Stefanski's system. As you pointed out, that's a system where year two is usually where we see a big jump with those quarterbacks. And then the Cincinnati Bengals, I know, are not a great football team, but they get Joe Burrow back, you know? And so that's – I always look at that first. Like, okay, what are you dealing with for virtually half of your season? You know, because your division schedule is 6 out of your 16 games, so a little under half the season. What are you dealing with? The Steelers are paddling upstream, man. That division has gotten a whole lot harder over the last couple of years.
It has. The Ravens defense would be a really good fit for J.J. Watt. They blitz more than any other team in the league, and that means that their defensive linemen get more one-on-one matchups mm-hmm. than anybody else. So it would be kind of like those old Wade Phillips defenses. They do it in a different style than Wade Phillips, but Wade was really good at getting his defensive linemen one-on-one on offensive linemen. I think the Ravens do the same thing. So if JJ were only chasing stats, like if you were chasing Reggie White's sack record or something, then I think Baltimore would be by far the best choice. But I think he's got more in mind, obviously, than that.
All right, as you guys know, we've been doing some cool stuff over the last week or so with Kids Meals Houston. Kids Meals Houston, you can find them on Twitter. You can also find them kidsmealsinc.org. Raising money for underprivileged kids to be able to eat. Thousands of kids in Houston lost their meals for this week when the power outage hit last week, and all the food was spoiled for these kids. And so, as you guys know, we've been having you text Kids Meals to 20357 to raise money. We've got a really exciting announcement. Ben, I'm going to have you pull these calls up here since there's two at a time. So we're joined right now on the dual hotline here by Kim Winden, who is the Director of External Communications for Lyondell Bassell, with a really exciting announcement. We're also pleased to be joined once again by Beth Braniff Harp, CEO of Kids Meals Houston. Ladies, how are you doing this morning?
Good morning.
It's great to have you guys. So, Kim, I'm going to let you do the honors here. I know there's a really exciting announcement that you guys have at Lyondell Bassell to help out Kids Meals Houston. The floor is yours.
Well, thank you. I appreciate your allowing us to join this morning. Well, as you guys know, food insecurity has been a huge issue since the onset of the COVID-19 pandemic, and we felt compelled to be able to help, which is why our company contributed $1.3 million to support global food banks last year. But with the impacts of the Houston winter storm, you know the impacts continue to be felt, including making food insecurity worse for so many people in our area. Kids Meals is a prime example, and the work they do is so important. No child should ever go hungry. That's why we're creating a challenge where Lyondell Bassell can help raise funds for Kids Meals. And we're not only just going to help ourselves, we're inviting others to join in the cause. When we make contributions to organizations, we look for opportunities where every single dollar can make an impact. And with Kids Meals, we know that every dollar will go towards putting food in the mouths of children in our community. And that's an incredible feeling. So in line with our advancing good in the communities where we operate, what Lyondell Bassell is going to do is we are offering up a challenge. And we want our community to help us to make a difference for those who are in need. To join our challenge, we're actually going to demonstrate the powerful force of the power of many that we have. So for every dollar our community donates, Lyondell Bassell will match all donations for Kids Meals up to $25,000.
Wow.
Oh my goodness. Thank you so much. This is incredible. You know, Kids Meals cannot thank you enough. And thank Radio 610 and Lyondell Bassell. You guys are helping make sure that we are meeting the most basic human needs of food and water to Houston's hungriest preschool age children and their siblings. And you'll allow us to stay strong and continue to feed over 6,000 kids every day. And our goal is to reach the 1 in 4 in our city that need our help. And that is up to 26,000 a day. And you are our first step in helping make that happen. And I'm so grateful.
Okay, so just to repeat here, that's amazing. Ladies, this is really cool. Kim, that's an amazingly generous thing that Lyondell Bassell is doing. Awesome stuff. Kids Meals to 20357. So that continues. You still text Kids Meals to 20357, but Lyondell Bassell is going to be matching up to $25,000, $25 donations, matching them up to $25,000. And that runs through this week? What's the time frame for that where people can continue to text Kids Meals to 20357?
Well, we're definitely running the promotion this week. Yep. We'll see if we need to do something longer. But, I mean, our goal is to be able to help these kids.
Yeah.
Just $2 provides a meal for a hungry child.
Yeah.
So with $25,000, we'll be able to provide 12,500 meals. We've got a lot of kids in our area that really could use our help.
No doubt. No doubt. Kids Meals to 20357. Ladies, this is really, really cool. I'll reiterate what Beth just said. Kim, thank you very much for jumping on board with this. It's an incredibly generous thing that you guys are doing.
Yes, thank you.
We're definitely happy to help.
Yeah. We can't thank you enough. You know, we can't feed Houston's hungriest children without partners like Lyondell Bissell and 610 Radio. And I'm just beyond grateful and surprised and thankful for this wonderful opportunity.
That's great. Well, this was really cool to do with you guys this morning. And again, text Kids Meals to 20357, and you can help out some kids who are really in need after that winter freeze last week. Ladies, thank you very much for all you guys are doing, and we appreciate it. We'll talk soon.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
All right, there it is. That's cool stuff. All right, so Lyondell Bissell, very, very generous, matching donations up to $25,000 for Kids Meals Houston. Text Kids Meals to 20357 if you want to jump on board with that. We've been all over that the last week or so here at the station, and you guys as listeners have been all over it too, so we thank you for your generosity in helping out these kids. All right, we continue. Are the Texans actually, believe it or not, more normal than we think? We'll explain next. So I had no idea that it was this bad in Philadelphia between Carson Wentz and Doug Peterson, and we're going somewhere to the Texans on this in just a second. But Adam Schefter reported earlier this week, Seth, that apparently Doug Peterson, the former head coach of the Eagles, and Carson Wentz, the now former quarterback of the Eagles, that during the season, and we knew it got bad during the season, they weren't a good team. Carson Wentz was not good, but apparently they didn't talk, according to Schefter, for, quote, weeks on end. And when he was pressed for exactly what weeks on end mean, Schefter estimated that they didn't communicate for, quote, 8, 9, 10 weeks.
Yeah,
this is the quarterback and the head coach. By the way, a head coach who's an offensive head coach. You know, it's not like it's some defensive head coach where maybe normally the communication pattern would already be somewhat diminished between the two. Are you buying that they didn't communicate for 8, 9, 10 weeks in Philadelphia?
Well, I'm not buying that it was total blackout. I'm guessing that when it came to football stuff that they had to talk about, they talked about it. But it must have been that they were avoiding each other or not. I've had that. There's defensive linemen that I've butted heads with that I didn't talk to for might have been a full year. But on the field and in practice and everything, we talked. We had to talk. That was just part of the deal. So maybe it was like that. Peterson bent over backwards to try not to bench Carson Wentz. He gave Carson Wentz every opportunity to not suck, other than actually, you know, providing him with other good offensive players around him. That part they failed. But he didn't want to bench him. He tried like hell not to. Lied about it afterwards, I don't think Wentz comes out of this looking like the toughest dude on earth. It's and maybe a little emotional. Like, I have a hard time seeing like Doug Peterson as the guy that refused to speak to Carson Wentz. I would just imagine, I'm not basing that on anything other than Peterson's just got a reputation as being a pretty laid back and good dude, like a guy that's pretty easy to talk to. Carson Wentz was very huffy this whole time. And I'm glad that – I hope Indianapolis has all kinds of drama with Carson Wentz. I hope Carson Wentz gets his feelings hurt up in Indianapolis the same way he did in Philadelphia.
I do too.
And all these people thinking like, oh, hey, well, you know, it's not as tough of an environment in Philadelphia. Let's remember, Indianapolis was the place that lustily booed Andrew Luck, who was retiring because of extreme health issues. They booed him. That's Andrew Luck's last experience walking off of that field, was getting booed by his hometown fans.
Yeah, for whatever reason, there's this narrative out there that like, hey, the Midwest, everybody's just so friendly compared to the East Coast, and it's going to be easier, and it's going to be calmer and nicer there.
Oh no, the old RCA Dome, the fans were pretty close to you. The fans were right behind the bench.
They vile.
There was this woman who just used to, she used to just unleash the most vile strings of expletives, and it was always with her kids next to her.
She was a regular like a season ticket holder?
I saw her a few times in regular season games, obviously. We never played up there in the playoffs.
Right.
I saw her twice, and it seemed like there was a year separating them. But I remembered her the second time I saw her, because the kids were a little bit older. And she was still just screaming about it, you know. And she was calling out guys by number. Number 91, you suck. Yeah.
Was she saying things worse than that? Was she saying things that you would get in trouble for on the radio?
She was using profanity. And, you know, you could kind of see everybody around her, the millions of Indianapolisans that looked at her as their queen, their goddess, pretty much. You could see like the admiration in their eyes as they looked upon this woman with her smoker's skin and her sagging jowls just, you know, represent the city of Indianapolis the way it should be represented.
Can I just tell you how impressed I am that you made it through that 30-second dissertation without saying that they were looking at her longingly because they're related to her? You know, that you didn't make an inbreeding joke in the last 30 seconds? I think you're maturing.
Sean, the whole damn Sunday is a big old family reunion. You can't do 6 degrees of separation up in that place. It's all like, who's not at least a second cousin in this place?
And there we go.
Let's hook up in the bathroom at halftime.
So here's what got me thinking with this Carson Wentz, Doug Peterson, they weren't talking to each other story. Seth, is we know that the Texans have some dysfunction going on right now. Not sure if you've heard, but they've got some dysfunction going on right now. They've got as good a football citizen as you can find in Deshaun Watson not wanting to be here anymore. So that's about as bad as it gets. And I guess my question is what the Texans are going through, maybe not the same, you know, maybe not to the same detail. You know, obviously Jack Easterby's involvement is something that we've never seen anything like this before, but it's dysfunction. And the Eagles were dealing with dysfunction. Is dysfunction in general something? Are the Texans more normal, I guess, than we're making them out to be?
Or not as... I would say it's not necessarily that they're more normal. I guess I've thought about... I probably got to cool it on saying this is the weirdest thing ever or the dumbest thing ever, because when you think back over through the years, there's been some pretty weird stuff in the NFL. And it's pretty dysfunctional. Anytime you've got a bunch of family-owned businesses, you know, with fractionalized rich people that are in charge of them. I'm not talking about the Texans here. I'm talking about some of these family-owned teams. The families hate each other.
Right.
They hate each other. So... no, there are weird situations, and Denver's been in one of them for a little while now.
Mm-hmm.
Denver's been in one where the family members are fighting over who's going to control the team. There's an actual trust that's in charge, so then it becomes a battle of who's actually controlling the members of the trust or who's trying to gain the influence of the members of the trust. John Elway has, like, diplomatic immunity from any kind of accountability or anything. It's really weird in Denver. The Raiders... for a long time with Al Davis in the latter years were super, super weird. I used to hear so many weird stories out of Oakland, including that.
Yeah, give me an example.
Well, like that he'd be walking around practice and he would interrupt the position coach who was in the middle of instructing his players so Al Davis could correct the position coach, tell him he was going about it all wrong, and then teach some technique from 1975. You know, he's like teaching a forearm shiver to a defensive lineman, and the position coach would just have to sit there.
Yeah,
and,
what are you going to do? He's the owner of the team.
Yes, Mr. Davis. Yes, Mr. Davis. And he walks away. Dude, I can remember when we scrimmaged the Raiders one year in Houston. It was so funny. That was when Al Davis was, you know, the last 10 years, really after their last Super Bowl performance, was when he had just kind of started to really start to lose it.
Off the rails, yeah.
They walked in there. Sean, it honestly, it was unlike anything I'd ever seen when their whole organization rolled onto the football field, because all the coaches... It seemed like it was a mob crew, you know? Not an Italian-American mob crew, but just like almost, you know, like one of those Eastern European ones where you got a bunch of shady-looking, huge white dudes that are wearing tacky clothes. Al Davis is wearing his, you know, his satin warm-up suit from 1978. It's just real, real tacky and cheesy-looking and probably very illegal. That's what the Raiders looked like. So they spent a long time like that after Gruden left, where it was just a weird organization.
And yet players would still go sign there. You know, free agents would still sign there and things like that. I think I don't want to say it's overblown, and certainly I'm not here, Seth, to quell the fire of the hashtag fire Easterby people out there. I'm not here to do that at all. I guess I just look at this Eagles thing, and I think of other teams around the league, and I think two things. One, that there's dysfunction that goes on way more than we see. You've made that point many, many times. That it's not just NFL teams. There's businesses, good businesses, that operate with a healthy amount of dysfunction behind the scenes. And number two is that losing magnifies this stuff. You're going to hear about more of this stuff when the team goes 4-12 than you're going to hear about it when they go 11-5.
Oh, you know the other thing I had heard about the Raiders that was funny? A couple different guys told
me this. Yes, more stories.
Was that it was like Al Davis just wanted it to be the 1970s again. You know, it was always that. So part of it was, too, every other NFL team, for the most part, especially these days, with good reason, really tries to separate the cheerleaders from the players. They don't want any kind of potential for any kind of misconduct or what have you. You know, certainly not the criminal variety, but also even just might look bad. Somebody might do something embarrassing. Al Davis encouraged it. Like Al Davis was like a porn producer trying to get these guys put together, having parties for them together, and just it was not discouraged one bit. And if anything, it was told to me by players who would play there that it was actually encouraged that there'd be fraternization between the cheerleaders and the players.
Somewhere, Vince McMahon in his first iteration of the XFL is collectively nodding its head. Vince McMahon wanted wrestling style storylines between the cheerleaders and the players in the XFL.
It is funny, like a lot of the cheerleading squads, I mean, they are instructed stay the hell away from the players. Yeah. I mean, it varies by team, but I know that it's just like to the point where even when you're just trying to be polite and you say hello, there's kind of almost like a rigidity where they're like hello and then they turn away and walk away. It's which is pretty impressive.
Yeah. I guess my message to Texan fans would be, hey, just take a look at the playoffs this year and know that this doesn't have to last forever. Whatever dysfunction you're feeling, whatever wonkiness there is going on with this team, it doesn't have to last forever. The Browns, the Bills, the Buccaneers, they all won a bunch of playoff games this year.
Yeah, I guess the Bengals forever have been known as the team, and that's the one that you wonder, okay, as long as their owner is their general manager and they try to cut corners as much as possible, are the Bengals ever going to truly pull out of it, even with Joe Burrow? I mean, they've looked like they're more willing to spend. But for them, it's always been – for the Bengals, as an organization, it's always been that they're just extremely cheap. And yet, they keep players around forever. It was almost like a pleasant dysfunctional aspect of the Bengals. I talked to a player once who had been there for a long time, and he said, you know, I don't think I should be in the – I don't think I should be in the league anymore. But every year, they just invite me back. And he said, that's what they kind of do. They get guys that, you know, they like them, and they're getting them at a good rate, you know, a lot of times either because of injuries or a criminal background or what have you, and they just keep them around. And they just, so as long as you're willing, and there's something kind of reassuring about that, isn't it?
Well, yeah, like for the player, not if you're a fan of the team.
I know. But even for players, even for fans of the team, at the very least, it probably feels like you get to know the players somewhat.
That's
right?
True. You can buy a jersey and feel good that guy's going to at least be on the team for 4 or 5 years.
I'll never forget this guy telling me this. He's like, I don't think I'm going to play at all. He's like, Seth, I'm in a lot of pain, but I'm pretty sure I'm not going to play because I shouldn't be. And how am I going to turn that money down? So I'm going to go back and play another year.
That's a lot of money. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, speaking of which, as we roll on here on a Thursday, Payne and Pendergast Sports Radio 610, this is a perfect segue. Guys who get to what seem like dysfunctional organizations that just don't want to leave. They don't want to get traded away from them. Quinnen Williams, whose name has been included in a lot of trade rumors for Deshaun Watson, the defensive tackle out of Alabama, could not have gone to a more opposite situation than Alabama in college by going to the Jets in the pros. He was on CBS Sports Radio last night with Zach Gelb, and he was asked, would you be disappointed if the Jets traded you to Houston?
Yeah, I'd be disappointed. I really want to be a Jet for life, man. I like New York, and I want to play in New York and different things like that. So I'd be disappointed if they traded me and didn't tell me.
See? Yeah. Even the Jets. The Jets have prominent players. I want to be a Jet for life.
This is the most depressing segment I've ever done.
You're the one who put the Wentz story in the rundown. You put it in there.
Well, as one of our listeners points out, the Browns and the Bucks are a bad example because they lasted for 10-plus years.
That's not forever. Right.
That's the fear. Yeah. No, it's not. I know, because we're speaking in terms of finality.
Not a death sentence.
The best thing the NFL has going for it is our own little version. It's our own little version of socialism in the NFL, right? Like, everybody, nobody's allowed to fail. the worse you are, the more help and assistance you get. It's just, it's as simple as that. And eventually the pendulum swings back the other way. The old saying, like every, you know, even a blind squirrel finds a nut every now and then. That's what ends up happening. You stumble into the right coach. Jim Irsay stumbled into the right coach with Frank Reich. Nobody's got better damn luck with that horseshoe than Jim Irsay.
Yeah.
Frank Reich was like his 12th candidate. And I, you know,
they
like,
hired Josh McDaniels. Like they had already hired right. Josh McDaniels, who reneged on them.
I mean, and at some point back in time, Jim Irsay hired Bill Polian. And even though Bill Polian annoys me, he's very good at his job and he knows what he's doing. And it's all the thing about the NFL. This is where your hope is, and Texans fans and NFL fans in general.
Yeah.
Yes, they're worth billions of dollars. But these organizations are small organizations. They are small. You think, I don't know how many billion-dollar businesses are run by several executives and then really a bunch of blue-collar workers. You know, us players, we're all blue-collar workers. Yeah. Very well paid, but blue-collar workers. And
it's a couple hundred employees, really.
You're looking at 100, 150 employees, right. You know, when you start talking about marketing and all that stuff. Yep. But they're small organizations. But on the football operations side of things, stuff that really matters in terms of competitiveness, 150 people. So what happens is if you hire the right couple of people, it makes a huge difference. That's all it takes.
That's right.
Likewise, if you hire the wrong couple people, it's devastating. But everybody cycles through at some point.
Yeah.
So the next key point will be, okay, maybe Caserio was that right guy. Maybe Cully or Josh McCown or one of these guys ends up being that right guy. So just by sheer dumb luck, you end up getting right. Now, it doesn't make you, you know, an all-time organization or anything, but I think there's more hope than at times I feel like there is. Well, I'm not optimistic about this upcoming season, if Deshaun's not here, but I'm trying to maintain a little bit of perspective on everything.
Yeah, no, and I think Seth, I would point out of the three big sports we've got here in town, that football is the one that has the one with the biggest roster, 53-man roster, is the one where it seems like there's a lot more turnover when it comes to playoff teams and things like that. When you get good at baseball or basketball, you tend to be embedded for a little while at being good at baseball or basketball. Hey, more from Quinnen Williams. He was asked by Zach Yelb last night on CBS Sports Radio, would you enjoy playing with Deshaun Watson?
That'd be cool too, man. It really don't matter to me. I just want the best for the organization so I can be able to win. So, and I think Sam's an amazing, great quarterback. They help us win. So whatever they decision that they the head coach and the GM and the owners make around with them.
All right, so that's Quinnen Williams. One more from him. Zach Yelb did a good job in this interview because he pressed him. Yeah, Deshaun Watson's good. We get it that Sam Darnold's your guy and everything, but yeah, Watson's really good, isn't he?
He's a great quarterback, man. He's a top five quarterback in the league, man. Like, makes some amazing throws, some amazing decisions. He's a great leader, man.
All right, so that's Quinnen Williams, who I believe was on the business end of Deshaun Watson's huge performance in the national championship game back at between Clemson and Alabama back in the day. So he was
on the business end of it?
He was on the losing end. That's my way of saying losing end. He was on the business end. He was on the losing end of the Deshaun Watson national championship performance. So these guys just can't resist talking. Even when Sam Darnold's your guy and he's a great leader and blah, 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 they can't resist talking about Deshaun Watson.
You know, Quinnen Williams talking about how he wants to be a Jets for life. Think about Joe Thomas. Joe Thomas wanted to be a Browns for life against all reason, because some guys still are wired kind of for, I hate using the word loyalty because I feel like it's a little too lofty or aspirational.
It's a brand of loyalty, though.
Yeah, it is. It's nice to be in the same place. Mm-hmm. It's nice to see something through. It's nice to be around, you know, it's nice to stay in the same damn house, like all of that stuff. A lot of guys still do feel that way. And I don't know, well, there's a little bit of a ray of light, right? Deshaun Watson liked that. Didn't he like some tweet or something?
He did. He shared, Will Fuller put up an Instagram video of him, of himself catching a touchdown pass from Deshaun with the hashtag resign William. So I'm going to assume that that's a plea to the Texans to resign him.
Yeah.
And then Deshaun took that little video from Will Fuller's Instagram story and shared it on his Instagram story. So yada, 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 Deshaun Watson wants to be a Houston Texan again. That's how I take that.
Alternate theory. He did not put the hyphen in resign, so you can read it as I always do, resign. What if he's telling Will Fuller to resign because he's ashamed of his PED suspension?
Will, to be clear, it was Fuller who put up the hashtag. So
right.
Oh,
the hashtag was resign.
Resign
Fuller.
William. Yeah, the hashtag
was resign William.
Yeah, okay. It was embedded in Fuller's video, and then Deshaun just shared the whole thing.
I'm so clueless. When you try to describe what happens on a tweet with me, I get lost.
It's not the most radio friendly thing either. Yeah, I think if you're a Texan fan who likes to err to the side of optimism, just know that Will Fuller was sharing videos of himself catching touchdown passes as a Texan with the word resign in there.
This is my most curmudgeonly moment of any week now these days, is when I have to start analyzing whether a guy hashtagging something or liking something or scrubbing something from social media. Do you know how dirty I feel doing all of this? I don't want any of this to actually matter, and yet it does, because I'm trying to understand the young folks.
This is the language they speak, Seth.
On the Deceptively Fast podcast yesterday, I was talking to Drew Hodgson, who's a little bit younger than me. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it means when you say something is meta. I don't know what beta testing is. I don't know any of this Silicon Valley mumbo jumbo jing. You have to explain this to me like I'm a 45-year-old, okay? Please. I don't know what any of this is.
I love how you're talking to one of your former teammates like you're an old man. Like you're from a different era.
He grew up with a cellular phone.
He did.
And I did not.
Yeah, that's a big difference.
I think I'm like 8 years older than him, so that's.
But it's a key 8 years, you're right. You came into the league in 97, he came into the league in 2005. In that little window there, social media was basically invented, and the cell phone became basically like a bodily organ in that time frame.
That's true. He didn't grow up. He's not like Generation Z, where they grow up with a smartphone in their hands. But he knew social media a lot more. When he was in college, he had social media. I got my first email address my senior year, spring of my senior year
in
college.
Right.
And boy, was that fun. boy, the stuff I did on that email with that email. SCP6@cornell.edu.
Does it still exist? Yeah.
I activated it last year because I had to try to straighten something out with my transcript. So I had to use my Cornell email to talk to the registrar.
One more time. Give it out one more time. I want you to get flooded with emails. What is it?
SCP6@cornell.edu. Because apparently in early 1997, there were five other SCPs at Cornell before me.
Who were more
important. They needed email addresses.
Who were more important than a former football player. That gives you an idea of where football was on the landscape at Cornell.
I had dropped out of college by that point. So they were like,
SPC6@cornell.edu. Hit him up. Send pics. All right. According to one prominent national NFL reporter, three favorites for J.J. Watt. We'll listen to the audio and see if these are really favorites for J.J. Watt. How is the market shaping up for J.J. Watt? That's next.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well-qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
All right, football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.